You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Continuing with the science of this conversation. Like I've said before, this investigation has basically developed itself. The next step has continued to present itself to me as the clear next step, right when I need it. After first learning about phosphate and then talking to the companies who were importing it from the other side of the world, I literally happened to be driving along a country road and happened to see a board advertising a company called AgriSea New Zealand Seaweed. I saw the word seaweed and I saw nutrients. I googled them and it turns out this is a New Zealand company specialising in the manufacture of macroalgae concentrates and bioactive extractions to add high-value nutrition for soil, plant, animal and human health. Wait a minute. They sell seaweed to add nutrients to soil? Is this a possible alternative to the superphosphate option currently being used a lot? Maybe too much? Who are AgriSea and how did they come about?
AgriSea was actually started by my mother-in-law and father-in-law almost accidentally in the 90s. They were teachers at that time and they went on a what's called a woofing trip around the country. And they travelled across the country and seen a whole lot of really, really bad, unhealthy farms, some good farms, and then came across a farm that was just stunning. It had really green pastures, the animals were really in good condition, and it was one of those summers where it was fungal and there was a lot of disease around. And they spoke to the German operators of this farm and their main input was seaweed. And they kind of thought, oh, wow, you know, what's all this about? And it's one of those things that once you know something, you kind of can't unknow it. And so they started experimenting in their backyard, researching seaweeds all around the world, then researching seaweeds in New Zealand, what species we have, what are they good for, what's their nutrient composition, and yeah, started making basically ferments in their backyard and trialling them, and then word got out to their neighbours and then local rose clubs, and then you know, next it was kiwi fruit growers and apple growers. So we've kind of built a business almost accidentally. It wasn't necessarily the vision initially, but once they made that decision to sell products for people whom their land is their living, it started them on quite a different path in terms of investment and research and development to, you know, make sure these products work on these kind of monocultural growing systems.
So they, it was really simply from seeing the difference between a farm that was being sort of fed seaweed and farms that weren't.
Exactly.
That was Claire Bradley, the research coordinator at AgriSea. After understanding more about the process of regenerative farming, which is absolutely a long-term solution, I wanted to know more about products available right now that could be alternatives to getting phosphate from a disputed area in the middle of a colonial conflict that the UN has been unable to resolve since 1991. With New Zealand being one of the last countries to still engage and import that disputed phosphate, back to Claire here in Aotearoa. Okay, so in terms of what you guys are doing right now, like what sort of products do you actually provide?
Yeah, so we've got a range that all our products are certified organic, although 98% of our customers are non-organic, which is quite interesting. We make a range for animal nutrition. We've got a PhD student down at Lincoln University who's kind of providing all the data of what our farmers have been telling us for years, so that's starting to have publishable papers this year, which is interesting. And then we make products, basically it's like a probiotic for the soil, basically feeds the soil biology, and those soil biology can make nutrients available to plant roots. We also make a foliar spray that goes really heavily used in kiwi fruit, avocados, grapes, and is exported to Italy for viticulture there.
Amazing.
So yeah, they're basically a range of fermented products out of a single species of kelp at this point, and for soil, plants and animals.
Okay, so let's start with something easy maybe. Why is seaweed so good?
Well, it's one of the most complex materials known to man. It has 20 of the 21 known amino acids. It has a really huge array of vitamins and minerals and nutrients. And, you know, internationally there are 10,000 species and there's still a lot of potential to be unlocked in those seaweed species. New Zealand has close to 1,000 species There's been a bit of media around one of the red species and its ability to kind of stop methane and cow's burps. So, it's kind of a new frontier of research, especially for New Zealand. It's used quite well internationally, but it's just its complexity that really makes it of huge value.
That mention of the burps, I guess it's amazing. It's working incredibly on both sort of sides of the process, at the start with the soil and the grass, I guess, in terms of what the cows are eating, but then even on the other side, it's lowering the sort of bad stuff.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And some of the data that's coming out from our PhD is around some urinary nitrogen reduction in the cow's urine, so therefore potential leaching reductions through our soils as well. So, I think, New Zealand has a huge opportunity to recognise the seaweed's importance ecologically in the marine ecosystem as well as, potential economics as well.
So let's, I guess, talk about the nutrients then. So there's my understanding is that obviously you need nutrients to grow as a fairly basic principle. But obviously when you have cows or kiwifruits, they are taking stuff from the soil when they eat or when they grow. And so is it necessary that there be a process of restoring those nutrients?
Yeah, I think there is, absolutely, especially some soils are inherently deficient in certain nutrients. But also I think that while the chemistry is well understood and the physical properties of compaction and aeration and this sort of thing, it's very well recognised in the Ministry for Environment's 2018 report, we just don't have the data around the soil biology, and that's a third of the equation. While adding nutrients is one way, there is a fair bit of nutrient content in the soil particles themselves, so it's releasing those through soil microbiology.
So, soil microbiology, what is that?
Okay, so think of your gut, and we're understanding a whole lot more about our gut microbiome and how that enhances all properties in our body. The soil is like the stomach of the plant, and it's all those bacteria, fungi, nematodes, worms, they're the kind of the elephants of the soil, if you like. There's a whole lot of organisms. I think we probably understand more about the stars than we do about what's under our feet in terms of the microbiome. Yeah, we know kind of less than 1% of the names of things that live in soil.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
And we put that in our mouth, essentially.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so in terms of, I guess, not only developing our knowledge around that, but soil microbiology, if that's what we're dealing with, and the way that we've dealt with it for, since we started doing pastoral farming, I suppose, is that you put the cows there, they eat the food, and then you replenish it, and then that's the cycle.
Yeah.
Now, this is what I said in terms of regenerative farming. So before that was happening, there were all of these ecological links, right, where animals were eating things and then pooing things, and then the cycle was happening like that. And what was in the nutrients in that excretion was actually enough to continue to replenish the nutrients and continue the cycle.
I think one of the other really, really key points in the way we've run our pastoral farming is that we've gotten rid of any plant diversity in our pastures.
Right.
So we've gone to a rye clover base. And farmers who are experimenting with adding, up to 20 different species in their paddocks are having huge results in terms of soil quality building, organic matter, soil carbon, but also animal health and production. There's research out of Switzerland that shows, species diversity in terms of plants will outdo nitrogen fertilizer addition in terms of dry matter production any day.
Wow.
So I think I think that's one of the main problems that we've got, have just gone to this rye, grass and clover mix that needs fertilizer to work.
Yeah.
Whereas if you've got diversity of plant species, they're communicating to each other, they're feeding each other, they're through the soil microbiome, and it'll outdo those inputs.
Right. Okay. I probably will come back to that because I feel like I could just talk about this all day. It's fascinating. Let's talk about phosphate. So phosphate is only one of the nutrients that we're kind of talking about, but it seems to be a fairly important one.
What
is phosphate? That's a good way to start.
Phosphate is essential for plant growth. Plants need to access nitrogen, phosphate, and a range of other nutrients. I think, again, the Ministry for Environment report shows that 51% of dairy farms have excess soil phosphorus. So they're above their target range for S&P. So that means that we're putting on too much. We're putting on far too much. Our farmers have been sold too much, and we're not taking into the count the kind of biological actions of the soil microbiome in terms of those soil equations for phosphate levels.
Is that because it's sort of a quick fix, you know, like it's something that just works, so we'll just do that and it's possibly more straightforward than trying to create diverse grass, for example?
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's the story, isn't it, that, you know, we've been told. And, you know, people, even companies such as Monsanto, are now looking at soil microbiome and farming and synthesizing microbes to give your soil. So it's happening already overseas. That technology is not widespread here in New Zealand. And so farmers stick to what they know.
Mm. And that, I suppose, it's not like as a farmer, wherever you are doing whatever sort of farming, you don't have heaps of time perhaps to be doing all the research on that, right? There's cows to be milked and so on.
Exactly.
So yep. What are the adverse effects of having too much Olsen P?
Well, there's, I guess, those interactions with your soil nutrients. So sometimes an excess of one nutrient can cause deficiencies or lock-ups of other nutrients. So you can get quite skewed results in your soil tests. Even things like your pH, how acidic your soil is, will tell you different levels of availability in terms of phosphate. So having excess, you're compromising the rest of the nutrients. The other issue is phosphorus is really a key player in the eutrophication of our waterways. Mm. So you get a little bit of runoff, and that you'd only need a small concentration of phosphorus to have really adverse effects on our waterways.
So that is a huge contributing factor to our dirty water.
Absolutely.
Whoa. Okay,
yeah.
And if we take a step back, so if people are putting, if there's too much phosphorus going into the soil, then if we take a step back, we don't actually need that much going into the soil, then we don't actually need to be getting that much from overseas, because that's where we get our phosphate.
That's exactly right.
And we get a lot of our phosphate, in particular, from the Western Sahara, Morocco region. So what do you know about the situation in Western Sahara?
I know it's a pretty dire situation. It's a very long-term situation. It's a complex situation, but it's also a situation that I feel as a New Zealander we should not be having any part of. I spoke with the Prime Minister when she visited us this year, and she went to those camps in 2008 and witnessed the atrocities that are basically happening in that area. So, yeah, from a personal level, as a New Zealander, I would want nothing to do with supporting that trade.
And so what do you guys do instead? Do you get phosphate, or what is it that you do? Is the seaweed enough in terms of not using that?
Well, no, the seaweed's not enough in a lot of situations. So we kind of, we not telling a farmer how to farm. They will use the seaweed as a biostimulant, which will stimulate the soil microbiome, which lessens their reliance on other fertilisers. So they actually work quite well in combination. It's not a full replacement for nutrients, but it's an enhancement of your soil.
Mm. And it's because of the process in which, like you said in the email, seaweed biostimulants have been shown to improve mycorrhizal fungi colonisation.
Yep.
So you're saying that actually the seaweed helps to open up the roots, or if I'm not really understanding it right, am I?
So mycorrhizal fungi are incredible beings, if you like. They extend the reach of the roots hairs. I'm not sure. I think it's about the research shows they get about 10 times more water and nutrients when plants are associated with these fungi. So they just get this huge network, and that's one of their main roles. Mycorrhiza fungi is not only bringing soil water to the plant, but also phosphorus. When you add synthetic phosphorus, there's quite a few studies showing that that actually inhibits the spores of the mycorrhiza fungi doing their job.
Right. Okay, so it's actually working backwards.
You're working against kind of nature, if you like.
I'm going to try and bring these together, but let me see if I can pull the threads together. What we've talked about is the seaweed as works together, right? It's a thing that you can work not as a complete substitute, but
an enhancer of any sort of kind of fertilizer that you put on.
Right, and in that process, it probably means that you don't need to rely on fertilizers as much, or at least the quantity of those.
Absolutely.
So it would reduce the kind of the demand for the amount of phosphate that we are getting from overseas.
Absolutely.
Okay, so if we are using these sorts of products, and because we get the majority of our phosphate from this disputed area, because it does hold the majority sort of source of phosphate in the whole world, it would lessen our reliance on that area. So Ravensdown, when they sent me a whole bunch of information, they said, this is a quote, "There is currently no alternative that comes without significant environmental impacts, processing costs, miscellaneous supply risk, and other human rights implications at the source," end of quote. Now, this, what we're talking about in terms of agri-seed, is an option, and it possibly, yes, would require, you know, further research or further money to actually develop the process?
Yeah, I think the key thing is that internationally there is technology around soil microbiome and how that unlocks phosphorus and can be used as alternatives. The problem is that there is not the research done here in New Zealand. There is the funding for that research so far here in New Zealand. So the problem with the funding model is it has to have a kind of commercial gain, but there needs to be some independent research on the role of soil microbiology in releasing soil phosphorus for farmers. Farmers deserve that research.
And I want to really hit home, I suppose, in the sense that obviously farmers, we still require phosphate, but if we need less of it, then we can probably get it from alternative sources.
Absolutely, and there are things like, you know, RPR and these other forms that are viable. So, yeah, like I said, it's just needing that independent research done on that soil microbiome.
So in terms of the way that the industry works, again, this is something I don't really know much about, but like you've got farmers, I suppose, on one side that are just kind of trying to do the work to get the produce and there you go, and then they kind of just require what is needed to make that happen, and then you've got the companies on the other side. So is there a space for the government to step in here?
Yeah, I think so. I absolutely think so. You know, often there's government-funded research in the way of things like Callaghan Innovation or National Science Challenges and this sort of thing. So it's making sure that the gatekeepers who are signing off on what gets funded or not, are thinking quite broadly beyond individual company commercialisation benefits, but to the wider country, the wider environment, in the farming sector as a whole.
And we're running out of time, really. Like, if we're talking carbon emissions or methane, you know, reduction, if we're talking dirty waterways, this whole process is sort of contributing to that, right?
Absolutely. And unfortunately, farmers are doing what they've been told to do. You know, they are following the guidelines in terms of fertilizer use, in terms of, how they run their operations. And so we can't keep beating them over the head until we have well-researched alternatives.
Okay, well, is there anything else you wanted to add?
No, I think that's it. I think that there's a whole new frontier that needs to be discovered and funded and researched, and I think it's an exciting time to make those discoveries.
Because seaweed also, while it's growing in the water, that does a process in which it actually extracts carbon, right?
Absolutely. It is a huge carbon sink, and you know, there's a lot of talk at the moment in terms of you know, growing seaweeds through aquaculture, perhaps alongside mussels, or you know, and like I said, we've got over 1,000 species, and New Zealand's got huge potential in terms of the carbon sink of seaweed, but also then you turning it into kind of high value products.
So it's really just a magic plant.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I might be a bit biased though.
It just sounds incredible though. Okay, well, thank you, Claire. Thank you so much for your time.
Oh, you're welcome, Lillian. All the best.
All right, you too.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.